and Lebanon. And on his five-day trip, Mr. Bush will also meet with NATO officials, with French President Jacques Chirac, and he will travel to Slovakia on Thursday, where he will meet with Russian President Vladimir Putin. In Beirut today, thousands of Lebanese protesters chanted Syria out, demanding an end to the Syrian military presence. Today's demonstrations came a week after the assassination of former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri in a bombing. NPR's Peter Kenyon was on scene.
I'm hearing a lot of comments from demonstrators here wanting to know the truth about who killed Mr. Hariri. There's a lot of suspicion pointing at Syria. But when you ask people, what if it wasn't them, they say, fine, let's just let the truth come out. Now, the government has agreed, in principle at least, to have a UN investigating team come in, headed by an Irishman. He's expected to arrive within a few days. But the Lebanese government is very clear that they don't want any international interference that they say could infringe on their sovereignty. A lot of people here are quite skeptical as to how that investigation will turn out.
NPR's Peter Kenyon in Beirut. The head of the United Nations Refugee Agency has submitted his resignation over allegations of sexual harassment at his organization. He'll remain in the post until a replacement has been named and confirmed. Linda Fasulo reports from New York.
UN High Commissioner for Refugees Ruud Lubbers sent a letter of resignation to UN Secretary General Kofi Annan Sunday, maintaining his innocence but citing Annan's loss of confidence in him as his reason for leaving his post. Lubbers said a complaint of sexual harassment by a female employee could not be substantiated and called a UN investigation into allegations biased. He also criticized the leaking of details of a UN investigation to the media. Last week, a British newspaper, The Independent, published details of the previously internal UN report. On Friday, Lubbers met with Annan, who also consulted with lawyers about the allegations. For NPR News, I'm Linda Fasulo in New York.
Tokyo stock prices closed slightly lower today. U.S. markets are closed today for the President's Day holiday. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Calvert, featuring investment research that analyzes financial performance and corporate integrity to find long-term growth opportunities at calvert.com.
Charlotte Talks made possible in part today by Duke Power, whose reliability engineers will help to avoid 600,000 power outages this year. Reliability engineers, because Duke Power is committed to providing the region's reliable electric service. And by Taylor Richards and Conger, offering made-to-measure clothing and shirts for men desiring a perfect fit, located in specialty shops on the park across from South Park and shops on the Green Cornelius, trcstyle.com. From 90.7 WFAE, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Caring for the aging members of our society is becoming an increasing concern in the lives of young people, and that's why we've done so many programs on the topic and continue to. America's population is aging. If you haven't already had to face the elder care needs of an aging parent, you may soon have to. Or you may have just begun to consider your own needs as you get older. To a certain degree, we know that you can't or won't really grasp the monumental nature of the problem until you encounter it yourself. We also know that when that encounter occurs, the need to make decisions, the sheer number of decisions, and the speed at which you have to make them can be overwhelming. That's why you need to listen with at least half an ear in this next hour. No one program can expose you to all elder care concerns. The best that we can do is expose listeners to a few of them on each go-round. This time, we've invited three experts from very different areas of elder care with different points of view. Nicole Vandiver Bryan is a partner in the estate and elder law firm of Vandiver and Bryan. She's an active member of the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys and currently works with the towns of Huntersville, Davidson, and Cornelius on programs for seniors in the North Mecklenburg area. She joins us by phone from Davidson. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I understand you had a little medical problem this morning. I hope everything's fine.
It is. Thank you. Sorry I couldn't be there.
Okay, that's all right. Don Olin is co-owner and director of Partners in Care. That's a Charlotte-based professional in-home caregiving company. After years of running a highly successful food business, personal experience with an aging parent led Mr. Olin to found this new enterprise, which is focused on helping elderly people remain independent in their own homes for as long as possible. And he's with us in the studio. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike, for having me.
And Anthony Cirillo is with us by phone as well. He's the author of Who Moved My Dentures? His book is also a work that stems from personal experience and deals with the facts and fiction surrounding nursing homes, assisted living, continued care communities, and other institutions associated with elder care. Anthony, thank you for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
I'm not exactly sure how to divide up the questions here because you all come from very different areas of expertise. But I guess I'll begin with you, Nicole. What is the best time to start talking about elder care issues, and who should the conversation involve?
Well, Mike, I don't think it's ever too early to begin the conversation because really we all need to start planning for the future. And what usually happens in our office, unfortunately, is that people tend to wait until a crisis situation has occurred. So I tell people, you know, if you're 18 or older, that is the time to begin planning ahead.
18 or older?
Well, especially for durable powers of attorney, mm-hmm. those types of things, because we never know when something will happen to us. For example, Christopher Reeve.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really never too early, and you should start with your family members, and you should, you know, consult others in that process.
So when you're saying durable power of attorney, you're talking about the 18-year-old. So in case something happens to that 18, 19, 20, 25, 30-year-old person, they have instructions set forth for relatives on how they want to be dealt with.
Correct. And the durable power of attorney, of course, only covers financial matters, mm-hmm. but there are also health care powers of attorney, living wills, and, of course, wills. But then as we get older, certainly as we think about long-term care and as we see that more people are facing that decision, then certainly you want to make sure that you have thought about specifically long-term care and what extra planning you need to do for that.
I'm going to hazard a guess, Don Olin. I'll bet you not many people call your organization or organizations like yours until the need has arisen.
That is correct, Mike. That's pretty typical. It certainly is.
And that's when things need to happen pretty quickly.
Correct.
And they are probably in a tizzy.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times we'll get a phone call from the hospital, and mom has fallen, and she's actually even gone through rehab and will not be able to go home unless somebody's there to care for her. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, families wait sometimes till the very last minute even to call an agency like ours for that. We'll do an assessment right in the hospital prior to getting her home and working with her at home.
But it's best to plan ahead. Would it be unwise or out of character for people to call a company like yours way ahead of time? I mean, way ahead of time, years ahead of time.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd go as far as years ahead of time, but certainly as you see your parent or parents aging and you start to see, you know, the tasks that are becoming more and more difficult, I don't think it's never too late to call an agency in there if that's what your plans are, to keep mom or the dad, mom and dad at home.
And Anthony Cirillo, you don't really go into this in your book, I don't think, Who Moved My Dentures. Your book is kind of based on some personal experience that you've had with your mom and the fact that you work as an entertainer in nursing homes and up and down the East Coast, and also some very interesting, funny and moving anecdotal stories here. But at what point, from your experience, do people begin exploring assisted living facilities and nursing home care after the problem has already arisen?
Well, yeah, I think as Nicole and Don said, more and more it's usually in a crisis situation, which partly, you know, kind of prompted me, having seen another side, to write this book to say you should start looking at some of these options a little earlier. I'm actually in Philadelphia right now, talk about personal stories, on a kind of caregiver mission. I have an 83-year-old mother who's kind of made the decision to finally move closer to my sister in Florida. So she's in very good health, mind and body, you know, very independent and things like that. So, you know, I think we're actually early compared to a lot of other people. We're making some preparations now so that she can live a quality life going forward. But and still, she's 83 years old. And so, you know, we've waited a while, too, before you consider these things. And it kind of hits you in the face when it does. But she had some, you know, medical problems this year. She came to an independent decision that says, I think it's time. I need some help. But I think most of the time it's more in the crisis mode.
That was going to be my next question. Because you said it hits you in the face. Did it hit her in the face? Because it would seem to me that the person most affected by all of this is the elder person who suddenly is faced with loss of independence, perhaps moving into a facility that they don't particularly want to move into, the loss of their home, or people coming into the home that they don't really want to have around. I'm going through this with my own mother. She has people come into the house now, and she would just assume they not be there, but they have to be there to help her. I mean, how do you get beyond that?
Well, and that's absolutely right. I mean, for many years, my sister and I, you know, have been saying, because it's easy when you're the kids to say, you know, you should just move to Florida, you know, and we come from South Philadelphia, and it's, you know, very much a very neighborhood feeling still here, and so, you know, you can walk to the local grocery store, and you can, you know, go see your friends around the corner, and you could sit on the stoop at night, you know, all the things that I grew up with, and so it's very hard, but she had to come to that decision herself, and it's actually been a, you know, we're in the midst of it now. We're packing boxes as I speak. It's very interesting that I would have this call today as I'm up here. But it's a very emotional week because certainly, you know, she's saying, you know, she went to her church the other day and said, you know, this might be the last time I'll be here. And she's very active, as I said, and she went to all her dances over the last week and all her friends and all that kind of stuff. But we're trying to really, and I think she's coming around to the realization that it's a new opportunity, actually, to go to Florida and be in a much, you know, I shoveled snow. That's how I woke up this morning, shoveling snow. So I felt like being home for sure. And, you know, better weather, better quality of life, new friends, things like that. And so we're, you know, I think it'll evolve into that. And yeah, while she still has her health and her mind and all that kind of thing, I think it's an opportunity. But she had to make that decision. And it really came when a realization that, you know, she just couldn't physically do some of the things that she had done before.
Now, what about people who come into the home? Because your organization, you're trying to maintain that independent lifestyle.
That's correct, Mike.
But even then, as I said with my own mom, she doesn't want those people in her house.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the first thing you need to do is you need to get the family involved at an early stage. Mm-hmm. As I say, when you start to see your family, your parents aging, you need to get the family involved to make some very difficult decisions. And if one of those decisions is that we want my parents, mom, dad, both of them, to remain independent in their homes, then you should start that process. One of the things that Partners in Care does is after we go for the assessment, and that's a very important part of the whole process, it's matching personalities as much as it is needs. When you have somebody coming into somebody's home, and to your point, Mike, it's not an easy task. You've got to make sure that you match the personality aspect as well as the need aspect of it.
One of the first things that Nicole Bryan, you say, is with your clients at least, and you're an attorney, is to get organized. You gotta get organized before you can go forward on any of these things, it seems to me. So when you say get organized, what are you talking about?
Well, certainly when you're facing a situation like Don and Anthony are speaking of, you want to get your health data organized, you know, your medical history or your loved one's medical history, their medications, have knowledge about their medical problems, and then also the financial and legal part of it, which is, you know, finding out what insurance coverage they have. What is their insurance going to cover? What assets do they have? And do they have the appropriate legal planning in place? And that's usually the powers of attorney, the advance directives. Do they have a will? Do they have a trust? That type of thing. And I do think that it's really important, excuse me, to talk sooner rather than later. And what a child can do or what a senior can do, him or herself, is to prepare themselves and to take the initiative by doing homework and finding out what the options are. And so, you know, those could certainly include staying in home, staying at home if that's something that's really important to the person. But I think if you get organized and find out what your particular situation is, and then look at the options that are applicable to your situation, people tend to make better decisions that way.
How do you start these conversations? I'm not sure which of you to address this conversation to, because I guess you, Don Olin, have been brought in by children of parents who don't really want to have people invading their home. But how do you begin these conversations?
Well, if I can address that very quickly, when I started this business almost 3 years ago, the first 90 days I directed all my marketing to the seniors themselves, and I found out very quickly that most seniors don't think they need the help. It's their family members that realize that they do. And so you know, you really need the directive needs to go, again, back to the family members, back to the children, and they are the ones that understand and realize that their parents are in need of some additional assistance or possibly in need of having to go into a facility.
So what do you tell your clients, Nicole? How do you begin this conversation?
Well, I think, again, if they can prepare themselves, which is by finding out what options are available, learning about the services available in their community and how those are paid for, and that is really the first step to having that conversation so that when you go in to speak to your loved one, you know, you can be positive and you can answer their questions because you know what the options are. And then I think you have to really ask permission of your loved one to have a discussion. And it's important to choose the right time and environment and to stay positive. And really important, I think, it's to be a good listener, you know, to let them say how they feel, what their wishes are, what's important to them. But it's important for the child to begin the conversation and to stay positive and to know what the options are.
I don't have time to get an answer to this question. I'm going to ask it, let you think about it over the break. Some older people are fiercely private. They don't want to really open their financial records to their children. They don't want to be moving things from their personal accounts into their children's accounts. They don't want to sign the house over to their kids because they think that maybe their kids want to take the house away from them. If they maintain control of the house, then they're going to maintain control of their independence. So what do you say to clients about the need to let others know the things that you have traditionally kept to yourself? I'll let you think about that for a second. We'll come back on the other side and get an answer from Nicole Vandiver Bryan, an attorney and partner in the estate and elder law firm of Vandiver and Bryan. Also with us in the studio, Don Olin, founder of Partners in Care, and Anthony Cirillo, author of Who Moved My Dentures. We'll talk about nursing homes and assisted living facilities with him in a moment or two as well. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part by 123NC.com, instant access to North Carolina criminal records and nationwide background checks. Criminal records can be searched instantly online at 123NC.com. And by Concord Engineering and Surveying, Civil Engineering, Surveying, Landscape Architecture, and GIS Services, plus construction materials testing for commercial and residential projects. ConcordEngineering.com. Well, we're rolling out the red carpet. We have our little gold trophies all lined up. Of course, they're all bowling trophies, but they'll have to do because Oscar is coming your way on Sunday and on Tuesday. That would be tomorrow. We're scooping Oscar with predictions from three of Charlotte's most heralded movie critics, Lawrence Topman from the Charlotte Observer, Matt Brunson from Creative Loafing, and Sean O'Connell from Charlotte Weekly. We'll all be here tomorrow with their predictions for Oscar Sunday, right here.
President Bush supports an international investigation into the assassination of a former Lebanese prime minister. He's called on Syria to remove its 15,000 troops from Lebanon. We hear the perspective of Lebanon's ambassador to the U.S., the Diane Rehm Show, Monday.
This morning at 10, here on 90.7 FM, WFAE.
Before now, the words short and fun drive probably didn't belong in the same sentence. But this Thursday morning at 7, they do, as WFAE holds a one-hour fun drive. That's it, 1 hour, and the drive is over. But we need everyone who can call in to make a pledge, because every single gift will be matched by a generous group of WFAE contributors. Help us make the shortest fun drive ever a success and call with your gift Thursday morning at 7. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. In the studio, Don Olin, founder of Partners in Care, and joining us by phone from Davidson, Nicole Bryan, attorney and partner in the estate and elder law firm of Vandiver and Bryan. And Anthony Cirillo joins us by phone. He's also a Charlottean, but he's in Philadelphia today helping his mother move to Florida. He's the author of Who Moved My Dentures? Now, the question that I posed just before the break, a lot of older people do not want to give out information about themselves, even to their children, that they have kept private, their private financial situation, etc. How do you convince them, Nicole, that that's a good thing to do at a certain stage of the game?
Well, that is a very tough thing, and we certainly have a lot of clients who have reservations about that. But the way I usually talk to senior clients about that is to let them know, first of all, what the alternative is, and that is, what happens if there comes a time when you are not able to take care of yourself, take care of your financial decisions and your health care decisions? What is the default plan? If you fail to plan, what happens? And traditionally, generally, that is a guardianship proceeding. So I go through and tell them, you know, as difficult as it is to think about this and to plan for this, it really is the best because a guardianship is expensive and time-consuming and really takes away your right to choose. I know with my own grandmother, we had a discussion about this. She's in Georgia, and I was talking to her about the need to plan ahead, not necessarily to tell anybody what her financial situation was, but she quickly told me, when I'm ready for somebody to help me, then I'll do a power of attorney. You know, and I said, well, grandmother, then it might be too late at that time. So we did. There are ways to plan in advance, but not have somebody take over at that time. For example, there is what we call a springing durable power of attorney that only comes into existence or only springs into existence at a time that you designate, which could be when your doctor says you're unable for physical or mental reasons to handle your affairs. So you can have it that way where you're not divulging everything, but you're making decisions now about who will handle those things when you're unable. And it's extremely important for folks to name an agent, a person to take care of their decisions that they trust. And so we go through that conversation and we talk about how doing powers of attorney and advance planning and talking about wishes and putting all of that in writing is so extremely important, but that way they have a say in it and people don't have to know, you know, at that time what their financial situation is, but they've done the advanced planning so that when the time comes, that trusted person can do it. And it doesn't have to be a family member.
I've forgotten which one of you said this. I think it may have been you, Don, that said that a lot of older people don't think that they need the help.
That's correct, yeah.
I would think that the same is true, that they don't think that they need to sell their home and move into a long-term care facility. And one of the things that you have in your book, Anthony, is these false truths scattered throughout the book, and where you take a perception and define the reality of that perception. And one of the perceptions is that long-term care facilities are places you go to die. Mm-hmm. And you say the reality is that long-term care facilities are places you go to live. That comes from, obviously, from your experience. What is your experience with people who either go there on their own or whose families put them there? How long does it take them to come to that realization?
Well, I think in talking and realize that one hat that I wear, I am a healthcare professional and I counsel hospitals in the area of marketing and PR, but I kind of fell into this long-term care arena because of an entertainment background that happened to intertwine with healthcare. So by no means am I guess, an expert in the field. So it's more of an observational
sure.
thing and lots of years of experience entertaining for these populations. But the places that bring me in, I tend to see a good side of things. And so I see places where activity directors are helping residents lead a quality of life. And I think it would vary from facility to facility and mindset to mindset how long it's going to take someone to adjust. I see a good side because there are immediately things to do when you get there tailored to the resident's needs and things like that. And where, you know, a quality of life is promoted pretty quickly, where, you know, learning is fostered, where friendships are encouraged and all those types of things. So in talking with activity directors, at least in the places that I go, I think, you know, 3 to 6 months into a facility, people are becoming accommodated. I have one very interesting anecdote in my book about, you know, making friendships. And one woman went to an assisted living facility where she met, you know, they became fast buddies, you know, when I interviewed them. They were both giggling the whole time I was interviewing, just like little schoolgirls comparing stories. And this one woman actually was medically cleared to go home to her home, which she still owned, and did not want to go home because of all of the friendships she made and the socialization that the place offered. So for her, obviously, it was a quick adjustment. But, you know, I actually think some of this comes in our lives and just the way you lead your life, you know, right now, me in my 40s and things like that, because there's so many things we can learn about these folks. Folks who are active now will probably be active then. Folks who like to learn now or make friendships now will likely continue those types of things. So a lot of the way you live your life, I think, can very much be, it will determine how, what kind of quality of life you know, live in a facility. And if the facility is a good facility that promotes all of that, it's going to help quicken the pace as well.
And a lot of, you point this out in the book, a lot of older people grew up in neighborhood situations where people sat out on the stoop and chatted and raised their kids together and knew each other through long periods of their lives. And today, we live on streets. I forgot who said that in the book, but we live on streets. We don't really know our neighbors. We don't know who lives across the street. We live kind of isolated lives, and these facilities, if they're good, recreate that neighborhood atmosphere.
Absolutely, and it was actually the two women I was talking about earlier. It was one of those folks who said that they're actually in an assisted living facility in Spartanburg, and you know, very much so is they have made friendships in these facilities because these types of things are fostered. I mean, there's communal dining and all types of things like that that bring people together. And even, it's interesting, one of the activity directors up actually in New Jersey here, there was a situation where, you know, talking about tailoring activities to individual needs, and they have what are called, you know, resident councils where the residents get together and, you know, beyond just the activities that you would think of, bring in the entertainers, do the arts and crafts and things like that, the activity director sat down and said, what would you really like to do? And a lot of these people wanted to get back to routines of what they did when they were in the home. So it involved, you know, even if they set up a little workroom where the men could go hammer nails or things like that, or the women wanted to actually, you know, do some laundry, or, you know, they wanted to deliver the mail. And so they incorporated some of these activities, you know, sort of getting back to what it was like in the home or the neighborhood, so these things would be fostered.
Don Olin, your company, as I've said several times now, helps people care for elderly people in their own home so that they don't want to go to these facilities or don't yet need to go to these facilities, et cetera. How many people would you say in this region are affected that way, who need helpers coming into the home?
It's a astronomical number. I don't know the exact figure, Mike, but one thing I'd like to mention is that we, you know, probably 90% of what we do are in the homes, but the other 10% is in facilities like Anthony is talking to. A lot of times we're hired by the children of these people that are in there to go in, to give them a little extra activity, you know, just a little bit of one-on-one. Sometimes we'll take them, you know, to the store. We'll do some different things with them. So it isn't just within the homes, although that's the biggest percentage of it.
And the kind of services that you and companies like yours provide include what?
Well, we do everything, activities of daily living. We do everything from personal care to light housework to meal preparation, transportation, the things that folks need for everyday activities. Our staff is made up of both CNA, certified nursing assistants, as well as caregivers. And our CNAs work more with the folks that possibly with Alzheimer's, dementia, you know, people that have had strokes. It's quite a variety. Our caregivers work more with just some seniors that want some companionship and need some a little attention. And our oldest is 99 years old, and we do the fewest amount of hours with her. Our youngest is somebody in their later teens.
Really?
So the need is pretty great out there for the services that we offer. And again, I would tell you 80% of our clients are definitely seniors, but the other 20% are all others. And they're in people, you know, people that have MS or Lou Gehrig's disease.
And what I'm hearing you say, I would think that some of these people live with their children already.
Some do. That's correct.
But some of them live by themselves.
Absolutely.
And these are services that could be performed in some cases by relatives, but those relatives may not have the time or the ability to do it.
Well, that brings up a great point, too, is Partners in Care has aligned themselves with the American Red Cross, and we are giving caregiving courses for family members. And we just finished up a series at the JCC Junius Community Center, and we start within the next couple of weeks with the Mecklenburg Library System. This is giving back to the community. This is giving to the family members who are caring for their loved ones the skill sets. There's a 9-modular program, and it gives back gives the skill sets of the things that our people are professionals in what they do, and we teach the family members how to do them.
704-926-WFAE is our telephone number. That's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. We're talking about elder care issues. We'll get into assisted living and nursing home facilities, et cetera, in a few minutes. We have an attorney on the line with us, Nicole Vander Verbrien, who deals in elder law and elder care issues, and Don Olin is the founder of Partners in Care. And as you just said, you formed this alliance with the American Red Cross family caregiving program to hold seminars to teach people how to do some of this themselves or the things to look out for. Are you not cannibalizing yourself here a little bit?
That's kind of an interesting statement because I had a good friend ask me that one day when I told him what we were getting ready to do. But, mm-hmm. Honestly, Mike, not to be corny, we want to give back to the community. We've lived here for almost 3 decades, and as a family, I've raised my kids here, and I was fortunate to have done fairly well in another business, and it was time for my family to give back, and it really has become a family affair. My son Matt works for us. I just hired my daughter, who's moving in from Raleigh, and my wife and I own the company, so it's a family helping families, and that's what we're doing. And I think this American Red Cross just complements that.
It seems to me that what you do is not a one-size-fits-all business, that it's anything but that, and that's got to be terribly complicated in terms of who you have to have available to you to help people, because they have to have certain areas of expertise. You got to be able to match those people up with the needs of people who contact you. What a nightmare.
Well, it is. It is a difficult task, and there's a term we use in this business is a bench of caregivers or a bench of CNAs, because if you call me today, and we had a situation that happened Friday, and we got a call, and by Friday evening they needed somebody in to assist with a parent, and this is a 24/7 situation. So mm-hmm. You can imagine how difficult a task that is to put that program, that scheduling together. But within less than a 12-hour period, we were able to do that. So you always have this bench of caregivers that you're working with, as well as your own existing. We have some that want to work 40 or plus hours a week, and we've got a couple of school teachers on staff that like to do it on the weekends. Yeah. So it's a variety of different makeups.
There comes a point, I suppose, when we're all going to face this. We joke about it. If you're young, you joke about going to the home at some point in your life, but it's no joke, and a lot of people face that, and when they do, whether they're facing that because their parent needs to go there because they're no longer able to take care of them in an in-home setting, or because the parent has become isolated and really needs the socialization provided by an assisted living facility, there's this guilt that spreads over the younger people who are faced with helping to make this decision about warehousing their loved ones in places like that, Anthony Cirillo. And a lot of older people feel depressed about the prospect of losing their home and moving in with, quote-unquote, strangers. Should either side feel bad about this?
Well, there was an interesting study in the August Journal of the American Medical Association. It has a long title if anybody's interested. It's called Long-Term Care Placement of Dementia Patients and Caregiver Health and Well-Being. And it was done by a professor, Richard Schultz, from the University of Pittsburgh. And they went in with a hypothesis that caregivers who put a loved one into a home would actually, the caregivers, fare better mentally and physically once kind of they, you know, finally did something and put their loved one somewhere. And they was proved just the opposite. They felt more guilt, more health problems after the fact and things like that. whether or not that should happen or not is a matter of debate. But what he concluded is that all of these caregivers could have benefited from increased knowledge and understanding of how these facilities operate and what their role might be. So again, it comes back to what Nicole said earlier, is, you know, as early as 18, you know, doing some of these things. But the earlier you educate, the earlier you become more familiar with these types of places, I think the more realization that these are viable options. I think people just, there's so much of a negative stereotype, and it goes back to, I think, a lot of the issues of abuse that, you know, people have read about and been sensationalized in the media, that people will not, that's just a wall that's sitting there. And so nursing homes equal bad. I mean, it's just a perception. It's so hard to reverse these types of perceptions. But I think if over time you take the time to learn about these things so that when you're faced with something, I think this whole issue of guilt will not be an issue. But I think when you're in a crisis situation, you're faced with things and things have to happen, that, yeah, there can be. But if you see the side, and again, it's a lot of hours that I spend in these facilities, but one of the things I encourage people to do in the book is, you know, go visit these facilities and go all hours of the day and night and observe and talk and become more familiar, because I think, as we started off with, these are places to live, not to die. They're a place to live another chapter of your life. So I think the more you educate, the better it's going to be. I think the more of the issue of the guilt is going to come in. But I'm certainly not a psychologist or sociologist, but I think the more education, I think the less of an issue that's going to be.
Okay, let me take a call before we run out of time in this segment. Let me start with Barbara in Charlotte. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you. Hi. I'm sorry if you've talked about this. I missed the first part of the show, but I'm waiting to hear some discussion about costs of all of this, whether costs to the...
I always save the best for last, Barbara.
and in this discussion of cost, I'm very curious to know any of your guests' thoughts about long-term care insurance for, for me, I'm thinking about.
I have a policy. So,
do you?
Yeah,
when
absolutely.
Did you take it out?
3 or 4 years ago.
Did you? Can you say how much it cost you?
It cost me, I just paid the bill last night, $1,170 a year. And I'm thinking that's not enough money. I'm thinking that that my policy terms are not adequate at the moment. So, Nicole,
really?
maybe you could address this, Nicole.
Well, the average cost, a recent study was done, I think, in August or September of last year. The average cost of a nursing home stay, at least, in Charlotte is $165 a day.
So mine is not enough, because mine, I think, covers $130 a day, and there's a $250,000 cap on it.
Okay. And assisted living facilities, of course, can be less. But it's not uncommon. I mean, we have clients whose costs of care are, you know, up to $6,000 or $7,000 a month.
Let me stop you there because we have to take a break. We'll come back and get a further answer to this question. Barbara, hang on, okay? All right. Thank you. We'll come right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Our program is made possible in part today by St. Catherine's School in Richmond, Virginia. Information about St. Catherine's boarding program and overnight visits for prospective boarding students is available at st.catherines.org. And by Mariner, specializing in business intelligence and data warehousing to help improve operations, customer service, and return on information technology investments. Mariner-USA.com. Coming up on the Diane Rehm Show at 10 o'clock, the Lebanese ambassador to the United States talks with Steve Roberts about the recent assassination of former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri, the investigation of this crime, relations with Syria and the U.S., and more. Ambassador Farid Aboud, Lebanese ambassador to the U.S. in the first hour, then in the second hour at 11 o'clock, due to a combination of technological advances and post-9/11 security concerns, there is very little about our lives that is not monitored. A reporter talks about why surveillance has increased so dramatically and how it affects us. Robert O'Hara, Washington Post reporter and associate of the Center for Investigative Reporting, has written a book about this called No Place to Hide. Isn't that special? That's all coming later on this morning on the Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation, now would be the time. 704-926-WFAE. That's 704-926-9323. 800-603-WFAE and charlottetalks@WFAE.org. We're back in 60 seconds.
NPR's Morning Edition brings you the news when you get up in the morning.
You hear reports from around the world. You get the story straight with in-depth reporting and news you don't hear anywhere else. That's what we've always done, and that's what we'll always do. Very simply, it's the news on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Join us tomorrow morning beginning at 5 here on 90.7 WFAE, your NPR news source. The Levine Museum of the New South and the Charlotte Woman of the Year Committee celebrate Women's History Month. An all-female panel moderated by Duke Power's Ruth Shaw will discuss women's leadership in the 21st century on Wednesday, March 2nd, 7 p.m. at the museum. Information available at 704-333-1887. WFAE is pleased to be a community partner of the Levine Museum of the New South.
We're back. Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. In the studio, Don Olin, founder of Partners in Care. They're doing a bunch of seminars with the American Red Cross, by the way, coming up very shortly. And if you'd like to sign up for that, let me give you a phone number, 704-347-8214, 704-347-8214. We'll hang on to that number, but that number will get you into a seminar on how to do some of this yourself, or at least some of the issues you need to think about yourself. Also on the phone with us, Anthony Cirillo in Pennsylvania, who has written a book about long-term care facilities called Who Moved My Dentures? And Nicole Bryan is with us. She's an attorney and partner in the estate and elder law firm of Vandiver and Bryan. Barbara just called in with a call about long-term care insurance. And Nicole, you're in the middle of an answer on this. How do you choose a policy? How do you know how much is enough?
And what happens if you don't have a policy?
Yes.
What's life going to be like for those, for us baby boomers in, 20, 30 years? What happens to our options? And
okay, that's all good questions. Nicole?
Well, long-term care insurance is certainly a good idea and certainly something that people should think about. I think it really, it depends. Of course, that's a great legal answer for you. It depends as far as what type of policy is best for you. And in this arena, and really in any type of decision affecting seniors and their families, there really is no one-size-fits-all approach. We have had, for example, clients who have come in and have been, the victims of high-pressure sales tactics and who have had agents come into their homes and scare them to death and in their 90s, for example. I mean, we had somebody come in, they weren't 90, maybe 85 or something, when they had a very, very, very low income and really limited assets, but were, talked into spending a good portion of their income to buy a policy. Now, that's, of course, the worst-case scenario, not to scare people, but it is a very good product. I do encourage my clients to look into it, to talk to a trusted person, somebody who specializes in this, and we also review policies very frequently for people when they come in because, as you say, Barbara, we do see it on the other end when either people have policies or they don't have policies. So that kind of gives us a unique perspective to review whether a policy fits a particular situation.
Now, long-term care, these insurance policies, they cover what? Nursing home care, in-home care like Don Olin's company provides? What exactly are they meant for?
Yes. Well, they are... again, it depends on the policy, but they do usually cover assisted living facility care, nursing home care. Some policies cover home health care. So all of those are important things. Sometimes they cover adult daycare. So those are important things to look at.
And at what age should you really investigate purchasing one of these policies for yourself?
You'd probably get different answers on this, but I would probably say in your 50s. We've had folks, we've had clients that have come in. I can think of one particular couple right now who came in and they are 72 and 73, and they purchased a policy. So it made sense for them, even though they were in their 70s.
Of course, the older you get, the more expensive the policy.
Exactly, exactly, the more expensive.
But now one of my frustrations with this long-term care insurance thing is that once you start it, you can't stop. It makes no sense to ever stop once you start because it's not like you're investing in some kind of a, what am I trying to say here, Mike?
No, it's
collateral.
It's not unlike life insurance. It would seem to me that you don't want to stop your life insurance policy because all that money is pretty much wasted. And there's no cash value to these policies.
That's what I was trying to come up with. There's nothing. If you ever quit it, you've just
thrown away your money.
There are some policies now or some companies now that do offer different types of policies, and some of those do have features such as you're talking about, that you can get return premiums, or you're really purchasing a life insurance policy that would have some death benefit at your death, for example, if you didn't access those premiums for your own long-term care. So that's important if that's a feature that's important to you. That would be a good thing to ask folks about.
Say that again, then, a death benefit on your life insurance?
Yeah, well, some long-term care policies, now they're coming out with all types of options, and it's even hard for me to keep up with what they offer. But they do have, for example, I know one client that we're working with now, they actually bought a life insurance policy. It was to cover a long-term care policy, but it had a life insurance component to it so that if they didn't need it, if this couple didn't need it, there would be a death benefit paid to their children.
I see.
Okay. And that's just one option.
Barbara, thank you for your call. I've got to move on. I've got a loaded bank of phone calls here, and this is just one aspect of this, which is a very important one, and I thank you for bringing it up. I also have an email about money, so let's talk about this for a second. It says, I've been there, done that, and got a T-shirt with my husband's mother. It took a couple of passionate letters and phone calls about what we went through to get my parents in line and not put it off any longer, especially since they live in another state. Now I have a friend in Forsyth County going through the same problem with his mom. He's a single caregiver, but also of his mom, also for his dad in some respect. His mom is in the hospital now. We're moving to a nursing facility for rehab soon. Can your guests give recommendations as who to contact for assistance in paying for this type of care? In my own experience, Medicare will pay for some, but not for straight daily needs, only medical needs. Medicaid and personal funds usually pay for this. Is there somewhere for my friend to go to get advice as to the best way to pay for all this? Back in the day, my husband's family didn't know any better and didn't really know where to go. So there is this labyrinth of things you need to know about money. Don't you?
Yeah, if you're asking me, Mike, yes, there is. We're licensed by the state. We are a Medicaid provider. We're a Veterans Administration provider. We're a long-term health care provider. So there are a lot of different ways of paying for this, and certainly self-pay is a major part of it. Of course, with Medicaid, you get into it's the level of finance and of income that you have. It has to do with doctor having to recommend and prescribe that you need in-home care. One avenue that we became about 4 months ago a provider for is the Veterans Administration, and a lot of veterans out there today, not just males, although the majority would be, but females also, there's some great benefits out there that I think I would encourage them to look into that help pay for in-home care and other types of care.
But when you're talking about nursing homes, and Anthony, I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but it seems to me that you have to either pay the freight yourself or be bankrupt. And if you're bankrupt, you're not going to go into one of the nicer homes. Is that correct?
Well, let me clear that up, too. Back to Barbara's question regarding, what are my other options, and Nicole and Don have hit on them. But Medicare is certainly one. But just to clear up a myth, you need to be hospitalized 3 consecutive days before benefits kick in, and then you have to be put in the nursing home for the same, condition, mm-hmm. of which they'll pay 100 days, but of which you pay a copay. So there is cost there. The research that I've done says an average nursing home stay is 2.8 years, and that adds up to, sort of like $150,000. Medicaid, as Don was just looking at, and long-term care insurance. But I had an interesting talk, interview where someone was asking me just this question about, Medicaid equals poor care. Medicaid funded facility equals poor care, poor quality. And I absolutely couldn't disagree, because every case is different. I pay, perform a lot of Medicaid, primarily Medicaid-funded facilities, and I see, I've been to other facilities as well, not as an entertainer, just to observe. And I don't agree that Medicaid equals poor quality, because there's a place in Hickory that I go to regularly that I'm not exactly sure what award it was, but, sort of one of those best-in-class nursing home awards. They've won it 2-3 years in a row. And when you go in, you wouldn't know the difference. Just because the wallpaper's not as nice as maybe another place, you look around and you see a staff that's been there for a long time, who interact well with each other. You see people who take the time.
So it's like anything else. You have to do your due diligence. You
absolutely.
Have to go and investigate these places and see what
feels right.
But
everyone's different, and one Medicaid-funded facility versus another one, the quality can be completely different.
Nicole, this all goes back to planning, obviously. What kind of legal things can you do so that you don't have to bankrupt yourself to pay for either in-home care or assisted living facilities, et cetera?
Well, I think there are a ton of misconceptions about this particular area. And, of course, as elder law attorneys, what we do, we really have a holistic approach, and we are looking at not just how to help people make health care decisions and financial decisions and end-of-life decisions, but how to work with their families or how to work with seniors to how to pay for those things. And as Anthony and Don have mentioned, of course, there's Medicare, which pays a limited benefit, and Medicaid, which I'll talk about. But Don mentioned veterans benefits, which I, too, want to say are underutilized but a great benefit and can actually pay for, in a lot of situations for veterans, assisted living facility care or in-home care or for nursing home care. So I think that is something that a lot of our clients don't know. And as they come in and we go through the process of how are we going to pay this, we help them through that process.
So those benefits are underutilized because people are unaware.
Wow. We find that so much. I'd probably say 50% of what we do is social work because we are educating people about what options are out there, and that is underutilized based on the lack of education. And people do know something about Medicaid, but they still are have a lot of misconceptions. For example, in an assisted living facility, we have a state-county program here in North Carolina called Special Assistance that will pay for some assisted living facility care. Of course, there is an income test on that one and an asset test. And then you have Medicaid that will cover intermediate and skilled care in a skilled nursing facility. There is really no income cap on that one, but there's a financial test. But if people plan in advance, it's all about timing. They can certainly do some things, especially when we have spousal situations. We are able to protect, and the federal government actually instituted a law some time ago to protect spouses of nursing home residents from losing everything that they have, from losing their house and everything they've worked so hard to accomplish. But the problem is people don't know it, and so they sell their homes and go live with their children and then later come in and we say, oh, the federal government has got a law to protect you.
Don.
Nicole, to your point, we've had several clients that were self-pay, and it can be strenuous. There's no question about it. And as their needs continued to be greater, we were able to guide them through some of the tunnels, if you will, for the veterans' needs. And I can tell you there is, to your point, there's some great opportunities out there. But it's a matter of really tapping into them. One thing I would like to say to that is, and for the listeners out there, if you are a veteran and if you're starting to become an aging veteran and you have not used the Veterans Administration course most locally up in Salisbury, get yourself a primary physician up there. That is the number one thing you need to do. You need to get established and in the system. From there, the process can start, and it doesn't need to be a long process. In fact, the longest portion of that process is to get that appointment and get that first assigned physician, and then it can work towards your benefit.
Within the Veterans Administration.
That is correct. Okay. I'm speaking specifically.
Let me go quickly to another phone call here before we run out of time. John in Charlotte, welcome.
Hello. I'm curious about adult daycare option for people who are living with a caregiver, a child, and who doesn't have extreme care but should not be at home during the day. Aren't there programs in Charlotte where people can receive care?
Okay, Don?
Yes, there are programs in the Charlotte area. I would probably recommend to at least understand those. There's an organization called Just One Call, and I would encourage you to call them and explain just exactly what you're referring to here. They can give you a list of those daycare centers, and I would encourage you also to personally go to them yourself and observe what's going on. To Anthony's point about nursing homes and so on, You have different varieties of those types of situations, and you want to, and your family wants to observe them yourselves.
And Anthony, let me thank you for your call, John. But Anthony, let me ask you very quickly here, and we really are short on time, so make it as brief as you can. From your experience in dealing with nursing homes on many different levels as a professional, and also in writing this book, what should people be looking for in terms of being able to choose a place that their parents could be comfortable in, or they themselves can be comfortable in and be happy in?
Well, I think you need to look at a few things. Certainly there are accreditations that nursing homes can achieve, just like hospitals can. So the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations also accredits nursing homes. So that's certainly something you're going to look for as well. I mean, you want to look for places where there's been a stable, as I mentioned earlier, stable administrative staff, a stable nursing staff, and aides, and nursing aides, and things like that. So you really want to look at, stability of staff. Because
should you drop in unexpectedly? Should you ask to eat in the dining room? Should you ask for a tour and drop in on somebody's private room to see what it really looks like?
You should ask to stay to have a meal if it's an assisted living facility. Sometimes, and I've actually done this when I've performed, I've actually stayed in guest rooms and had the whole experience of staying there. So you can do that. You can ask to go to a family council meeting. There's family councils as well as resident councils. You can go to a resident council meeting as well. And so there's lots of different things to do your homework. You kind of want to look at the ownership. How stable has that been? A lot of you'll find, just like in the hospital and any industry these days, there's been mergers, there's been consolidations, who's buying who.
Right.
And so you really need to look at that kind of thing as well. Who owns it? Is it for-profit? Is it not-for-profit? Talk to hospital discharge planners. I mean, there's a whole, I have about 20 points in the book, but I can't get into all of them.
Okay, and Nicole, very quickly, because we're out of time here. Do people need to see people like you, attorneys, to figure out the financing of all of this?
Well, elder law is a very complex and confusing system or practice area, and
very
it changes
quickly.
All the time. So, yes.
Okay.
And actually, they can go to our website, nclaw1.com, or www.naela.com, which is the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys.
Okay, thank you, Nicole. We're out of time. Nicole Vandiver with Vandiver and Brian, Don Olin, Partners in Care. Their number, by the way, for the sign-up for the Red Cross Seminar is 704-347-8214. Anthony Cirillo's book is called Who Moved My Dentures? It's a great book, by the way. I'm Mike Collins.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Our senior producer is Wendy Bratz-Herkey. Our associate producer is Tim Ross. Our interns are Anna Karnick, Susan Greeley, and Mia Ventura. And our engineer is Joby Sprinkle.
By the way, Don Olin's company, I don't think I mentioned it in the last minute or two, is Partners in Care. Once again, that number for the Red Cross Seminar, 704-347-8214. Our program is made possible in part by Dickens Michener Realtors, serving South Charlotte and Ballantyne. Dickens Michener Realtors, helping you find your place on the web at dickensmichener.com. And by Sam's Mart, a neighborhood convenience store serving the Charlotte area. Sam's Mart offers freshly brewed Café de France coffee and fresh pastries. Store locator and information online at samsmartinc.com.
Later today,